Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Looks like Tropical Storm 6 has formed just west of Tampa, Florida. This is going to stay well to our east, so it's not going to affect us. But that's not saying that a tropical depression won't affect us this year, as we are still in the middle of hurricane season, and we want to make sure that you are absolutely ready for it. You can download the WTMA Hurricane Preparedness Guide from WTMA.com. It is free. It's full of life-saving information and brought to you in part by Property Casualty Insurers Association of America, Jeff Cook Real Estate, and East Bay Deli. So go ahead and get your hurricane guide right now at WTMA.com. Again, Tropical Storm 6 is forming just west of Tampa, Florida. My buddies down there probably going to get a little bit of rain over the next couple of days. It's going to be off our coast, I would say, somewhere between, it'll be Tuesday, late or early in the morning, probably about 7 o'clock on Tuesday morning, it'll be off our coast, maybe bringing us some rain, but they're not really expecting this to affect us too much here in the low country. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. You ever have a trouble with a pet? You ever get bit by your pet? I mean, it happens on occasion, right? You know, maybe your dog's not feeling good. He's a little irritated or something like that. Maybe he's got a little, you know, a little pain, little arthritis or something. You rub him the wrong way and he snaps at you. But this call from this lady is kind of one that is for the record books here.
Hello. I have a bulletin splitter stuck to my face.
Ma'am, you have a what?
Bulletin splitter. I'm outside with it.
You're outside with a boa constrictor stuck to your face?
Yes.
Okay.
I just rescued it yesterday, please.
You arrested the boa constrictor yesterday?
I rescued it.
You rescued it. Okay. Ma'am, I've notified the ambulance. Is the
please, where are you? That's all I know.
Ma'am, I've notified the ambulance and the fire and the police department. So the boa constrictor has a hold of your nose?
Yes.
Can you pry its jaw open if you pinch its jaw?
No, I'm trying. There's blood everywhere.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so this woman rescued a boa constrictor. You're rescuing a boa constrictor? What are you rescuing a boa constrictor from is the question. I think boa constrictors are one of those things that you need rescuing from, as this lady found out quite heartily here. So boa constrictors do not need to be rescued. They need to be relocated. That's what they need to be. So, boy, messing with a boa. I swear to you. I don't know. Maybe it's not in me. Maybe I just don't have that genetic material inside me that says, boa constrictor. I think I'll mess with it. Instead of just leaving the thing alone and calling the police, I rescued a boa constrictor. I don't know how big this thing was or anything like that, but it is that's pretty rough. I heard a comedian talking about, it was a comedian. He was talking about he had a friend of his that was somewhere, and a guy was being strangled by his pet boa constrictor. His pet boa constrictor. It's like, you know, so this I think it was in a biker bar. That's what it was, a biker bar. And this boa constrictor started just clamped down on this guy's neck, and he started just strangling this guy. And all these bikers, you know, shunk, out come the knives, right? And he's like, no, don't kill it. Just get some whiskey and throw it in his face. And so whether or not this story is true, I don't know. So one of the bikers gets a shot of whiskey and he throws it in the boa constrictor's face and the boa constrictor lets go. So the weird thing about that story is, how did that guy know that throwing whiskey in a boa constrictor's face would let him let go? How many different, throw a beer in his face, didn't work, dang it. Vodka, no, it didn't work on that. Whiskey, single or double malt, it doesn't matter, just try.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
I have never been a big comic book fan. Never in my life. Never in my life. I think I had, we moved into a house when I was a kid down in Florida for a brief time. And somebody had left behind a Phantom comic book. I don't know if you know the Phantom, left, and that was cool. I read that thing about 40 times. But I never went and bought one. Never went and bought a comic book. I think I bought the Kiss comic book. I know, right? Yeah, I was a huge Kiss fan. Huge. It was, in fact, my cousins tell me now that I'm a grown-up that they used to come over to visit my grandparents, and they would go into my bedroom when I wasn't there, and they would pray for me because they thought I was a Satan worshiper. Of course, these were the cousins who then turned out to be pagans. But there you go. So, never been a big comic book fan, but if you are, there is a chance for you to pick up about 400 to 500 comic books because the Charleston County Sheriff's Office is auctioning them off. Yep, 400 comic books that were seized in a drug investigation. Now, if you go to govdeals.com, that's govdeals.com, you can bid on these comic books. Right now, there are 50 bids in. Listen to how much people are paying for it. And if you think about it, okay. The current bid is $640. $640. The minimum bid, $645, and you can only go up by $5 increments. So if you're interested in comic books, this might be the deal for you. 50 bids in. Right now, they're looking at $640 for these comic books. Now, this is all part of the little thing they call forfeit or asset forfeiture. Anybody who is, you know, caught in a drug bust or anything like that, they can seize property. And it's typically related to folks on alleged drug-related crimes. And the auctions almost always involve cars like a 1978 Ford LTD that the sheriff's office also has listed for sale. Television sets, there's some of those there too. But this comic book collection, it was seized after deputies responded to a reported home invasion back in 2014 in Ladson. Inside the trailer, they found the subject of a break-in. Deputies found guns, ammunition, pounds of marijuana, and comic books, according to police reports. Now, this auction is going to end at 11:15 tomorrow. We don't know if there are any Batman or Superman comic books in that collection, but you can go online and check that out. So, but the whole now, here's what there is not in this story. Whether or not this person was actually convicted of a crime. Now, asset forfeiture is something that I absolutely can't stand, because if you're just an average citizen tooling around out there and you got $10,000 on you and they pull you over, they can take that money. They can legally, and I'm using air quotes here, legally take that money because, well, they just assume you're a drug dealer. And I think that's wrong as wrong can be. And they don't have to give it back. That is the weird thing. They don't have to give it back. And for the people that try to get their money back, it is a long, drawn out, expensive process to do that. So I think, and this is one of the issues that I really part with Jeff Sessions on, because he's all for asset forfeiture. I am completely against it. Now, if you're convicted of that crime, fine, take it. But if you're just suspected of a crime, no. You are innocent until proven guilty.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
So what do you do if you get a bad review? If you got a business, you know, and there you are on Google, you know, they can all, you know, people can look you up and leave a bad review for you. And sometimes it can be pretty damaging to your company or your business. And here's one of my thing. I don't think you should be able to give a review on Google anonymously. I really don't. But you know what? That's the way it is. That's the playing field that you have. That is where the ball lies, and you have to play it where the ball lies. So there is this psychiatrist over in West Ashley that was so offended by an online review that he got that he has sued the anonymous critic and demanded that Google release the user's identity. So what did the review say? Nothing. It said nothing. It just gave Dr. Mark Beal 1 out of 5 stars. That is one of the things that Mark Beal has said has caused him extreme and constant distress. He says that it couldn't have come from an actual patient, making it false and libelous. His lawsuit noted that he was highly regarded on other websites. He had enjoyed 4.5 stars. I'm reading for the Post and Courier right now. He had enjoyed 4.5 stars on WebMD.com. He says, it's a mystery. The 1-star review is out of sync with the feedback I get from my patients. So we decided to look into it. His defamation claim is shaping up as a battle over First Amendment rights in an age of internet anonymity. The suit against quote-unquote John Doe was filed back in March in Charleston County Court. But it has ratcheted up this month as Google objected to Beal's attempts to expose what he called a spoofer. So what does, I mean, here's the thing. The best thing to do with an online review like that. Now, here, two people really think that Google, if you have an anonymous review and they don't leave any details or anything like that, and the business says, hey, look, I don't even know this guy, then maybe Google should take something like that down. However, they're not doing this. So after people found out about Dr. Mark Beal's lawsuit over the 1-star review, oh boy, you know how the internet is. You've seen it. You've dealt with it. Everybody is on here giving him a 1-star review now. I mean, there is just review after review after review. One person saying, Todd says, really, I think you should take some Prozac so you won't care about anything anymore. Kevin Hall said John Doe should have given him 0 stars. Matt said, suing over a negative review? Get a life. Cato said, really, brah? Shake my head. Todd said, suing because someone gave him a 1-star rating? Is he on psych drugs? Phil said, guy has an ego problem and issues with the First Amendment. There you go. So that's what you got right there. So if somebody gives you a negative review, my advice would be ignore it. Just go on, especially if you know that everybody else is loving on you. If everybody else is saying you're great, you're wonderful, you're absolutely fantastic, just let the bad reviews go by the wayside. All right, let's go to Jerome. He is calling in this morning. How are you, Jerome?
Hey, you got any proof about President Obama wiretapping Trump Tower yet?
Yeah.
On the proof.
Yeah.
Where was it?
Well, Susan Rice asking for the unmasking of Americans. Michael Flynn, his private conversations being recorded by Homeland Security. How much more proof do you need, Jerome?
Did you get it from James Comey?
James Comey. Oh, yeah. He's a reliable source, isn't he?
He doesn't see any evidence.
Uh-huh. He says he doesn't see any evidence of Russian collusion, but you don't take that into consideration, do you there, Jerome?
Hey, what other lies is Trump going to come up with now?
Okay, other lies that Trump is going to come up. Jerome, I think you might be looking at the wrong side as far as the lying is concerned, because they're trying to get Susan Rice to testify, and she's saying she's not going to do it now.
Hey, I can't wait till he finds the guy doing this investigation. Then we'll see the end of his presidency, which is what I'm waiting for.
Okay, I'm sure you are, Jerome. Not going to happen, but I'm sure you are waiting for it. Okay.
We'll see. You don't think it's going to happen? We'll see.
Okay. All right, we'll see. I'm sure you'll call back. You know what, though? That was kind of refreshing from Jerome, because we don't usually put him on the air. Because usually when we pick up the phone, you know, and John Quincy will be in there and he'll say, WTMA, Jerome will give a very lucid and well-thought-out proposition. And he'll usually say something like, Charlie James is on crack, and then hang up. So that's why we don't usually let Jerome on. But that was very good, Jerome. That's very good. It was good. So you want to know about the wiretapping of President Trump? I don't know how much more evidence that you need that now we're finding out that just a lot of Americans were unmasked under Susan Rice and the Obama administration, and all of this was happening to try to find some kind of dirt on the Trump campaign. That's what they were looking for dirt on Trump. So who was actually doing the collusion there? I think it was folks on the left. And have you noticed the whole Russian thing has died down a little bit? Ever notice it? Have you noticed it's dying down? Even Nancy Pelosi is saying that Hillary Clinton was the reason that she lost the 2016 election. Chuck Schumer saying that it was Hillary's fault and it was the Democrats' fault, that they didn't have a clear and concise message. It was all their fault. And Pelosi is even now saying, hey, you know what? We're not even worried about winning the election in 2018.
What are the chances Democrats win back the House in 2018? And if so, will you run for Speaker?
That's so unimportant. What is important is that we have the lively debate on a better deal, better pay, better jobs, and a better future. And that's what we look forward to having. And we have unity in our party. You saw it with the fight on the Affordable Care Act in the House and in the Senate. We're very proud of the fact that our party has diverse thinking.
There you go. So they have unity in their party, but the only thing their party is really unified in is the fact that they hate President Trump.
WTMA! It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Coming up at 8:10 this morning, we're going to be talking with Hector Salazar. He is a Venezuelan-American about this vote that they had yesterday in Venezuela. Basically, what this thing could do is it could turn Venezuela into a dictatorship. So who was really holding the election yesterday in Venezuela? Cuba was. Cuba. This communist country that the folks on the left love to death. Now, they hate Russia, wink, wink, wink. Yeah, we hate Russia, wink, wink. But we love Cuba. Oh, Cuba's great. Cuba's awesome. They got Hispanic people down there in Russia. And we love Hispanic people. They're absolutely awesome. We love that. Yeah, they're all Hispanic down there. Yeah, they got that salsa music. Yeah, they dance the salsa down there. So we love them. They don't do that in Russia. No, in Russia, they wear big, heavy coats and drink vodka. So we don't like those people. They're blah, 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 blah. But we love the Cuban people. So Cuba was, it actually runs Venezuela. This Jeff Duncan did a column in the Wall Street Journal, and he says that Venezuela is headed for a civil war. And I absolutely believe that. I mean, they've got very little electricity down there. The government down in Venezuela is just the state runs everything. They said that, the people didn't have enough bread down. Now, how does this is familiar, right? Remember that whole thing, let them eat cake? Was it Queen Victoria? Who said that? I can't remember who said that. Queen, the peasants don't have bread to eat. Oh, they don't have bread? Well, let them eat cake. They don't have cake either. I get it now. Okay. So down in Venezuela, they don't have bread. So what did they do? The government came in and took over all the bakeries and threw the bakers in jail. Well, that's absolutely going to make bread just magically appear on the shelves. So Jeff Duncan was writing about this. He said, forget all you've heard about dialogue in Venezuela between the regime and the opposition. Hungry, hurting Venezuelans are done talking. The country is in the early stages of civil war. Sunday's Cuban-managed electoral power play was the latest provocation. He went on to say that in my column 2 weeks ago, How Cuba Runs Venezuela, I failed to mention Havana's 2005 takeover of the Venezuelan office that issues national identity cards and passports. We just had a caller not long ago saying that there was a guy trying to, I think it was either coming to or from Venezuela. However, they did not have enough paper to print his passport. But now we're hearing that Cuba actually runs the office that prints these passports. So basically, you're not getting a passport. You're not going to be able to leave Venezuela because you got no passport, right? It was a quote-unquote Castro intelligence coup carried out then when then-President Hugo Chavez was in office. With his permission, the move handed Havana the national Rolodex necessary to spy on Venezuelans and surreptitiously colonize the country. Islamic extremists received Venezuelan passports to give them false cover when crossing borders. Regime supporters got the papers they needed to vote under more than one identity. Oh, that's nice. So they'll issue these passports to these, you know, Cuban or Venezuelan nationals, the members of the regime. They'll give them a fake passport so they can vote more than twice. Now, we hear that yesterday, 8 million Venezuelans voted to give the country, basically the government of the country, unilateral sweeping powers, which will effectively turn Venezuela into a dictatorship. So Representative Duncan went on to say, last week the National Guard arrested and badly beat violinist Willie Ortega, who has become a national symbol of peace. Many of those fleeing said they fear that after Sunday, the regime crackdown would intensify. Some of those staying behind have already begun to launch counteroffenses. This provides the regime an excuse for increasing repression, yet there is a growing sense that the violence is only the remaining option. So Venezuela is at a very precarious point in their history. So we're going to find out, I'm sure, in the next coming days or weeks. However, you're not seeing a whole lot of this on the mainstream media. Of course you're not, because, you know, they've got to be talking about President Trump. So where does Venezuela stand? How are they going to be able to make it down there? I don't understand. This country should be one of the richest countries in the world. They've got everything. They've got gold. They've got oil. They've got natural gas. They've got precious stones. They've got, I mean, a huge agricultural resources. But yet they're absolutely broke. That's what socialism does. And whenever these little, you know, these precious little snowflakes on college campuses, whenever they talk about socialism, they need to look at Venezuela. Oh, well, that's America's fault. America did all that. No, it's socialism's fault. So how are these folks being taught? My wife, Sheila, went down to the Barnes & Noble. Yeah, the Barnes & Noble. They're on Calhoun Street. Now, this Barnes & Noble bookstore also serves as the bookstore for the College of Charleston. So she was going down there. She's getting me a daily planner. I like to write things out. I don't like to type them up. I like to write them out. So she's getting me a daily planner. And she said, you would not believe some of the books that is in that bookstore. I said, what do you mean? She said, it's all leftist. Everything is liberal. Everything. She said there was one book there with President Trump's picture on the cover, and it was a book about how horrible the president is. Well, of course, because we all know that leftists run our universities, and they're certainly the ones teaching. So, I don't know. That's just the world that we live in these days. It's all going to the left. Because why? Because it's an easy sell. That's just it. Well, the government will take care of you. Well, that sounds awesome, doesn't it? Until you realize who the government is. The government is of the people, for the people, and by the people. We are the government. Now, the folks up in Washington, D.C., they seem to forget that just as soon as they get inside the Beltway. However, it's our money that the government spends. Remember, the government doesn't make anything. They do not generate income. They collect it, and they do it at the end of a gun. And if you don't pay your taxes, you're going to jail. And if you don't go to jail, they will shoot you. Don't think I'm kidding about that. That's not hyperbole. Go ahead and try to resist arrest when somebody comes to take you to jail for not paying your taxes. That's what happens. So, yeah, it always sounds good when the government's going to come to your rescue, but it never really is. It's never the solution. And they're finding that out down in Venezuela right now. They're having a rough time down there. We'll talk with Hector Salazar coming up in just a few minutes about exactly what happened yesterday. Also, we got Bob Constantini calling in at about 10 minutes past 9 o'clock this morning. We'll talk about General John Kelly and his first day on the job.
Now, here's more of the TMA Morning Show with Charlie James.
Yesterday in Venezuela, they held a vote basically to give unlimited power to President Maduro and his cabinet, basically voting in a dictatorship down in Venezuela. Let's talk with Hector Salazar right now. He is a Venezuelan-American. He is here in Charleston, and he is watching the results of these elections very closely. Good morning, Hector. How are you? Are you there? Let's make sure he is ready to go there, G-Man. Hector, are you there?
Hello.
Oh, there we go. So, Hector, Argentina, Canada, Colombia, Mexico, Panama, Paraguay, Spain, Britain, and the United States are all saying that they are not going to recognize this vote yesterday. They say about 3.6 million people voted. Are you buying that?
No. Actually, the numbers are more like 2,400,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the opposition had, you know, people out there counting the numbers to get, you know, a sense of really what happened. The truth is that people had been voting for already a few days.
Right.
Anywhere where they had these machines, and they're everywhere, because now if you go buy food, you have to give an ID and put your thumbprint, because you can't go to another store to buy something else. Well, they were, any time that somebody was putting their little finger there, they were capturing it like if they were voting. But even with all of that, it was empty. Everywhere in Venezuela, it was empty. Even them busing people around, they were empty. So, no, we're not buying that. We know that they don't have, they said that they did over 8 million votes.
Right.
You're talking about numbers like when Chavez, very popular Chavez, was alive.
Mm-hmm.
Those were the numbers that he got.
Right.
So no, we're not buying it. And we knew that this was going to happen, Charlie. So it's nothing new.
Right. And you guys gathered yesterday at Waterfront Park over in Mount Pleasant. What kind of a turnout did you have?
We had about 70 people come out. Again, we had another rally going on in Colombia.
Right.
So the majority of the people, I guess, took the trip over there because they wanted to make a bigger presence there in the, you know, state capital. You know, obviously we gathered and we looked at some of the news. We prayed for Venezuela. But we're clear. We knew what was going to happen.
Right.
You know, say whatever they want. So, the reality is that within 2 years, Maduro has been able to lose over 3 million or more people within the shortest span of time that any politician in Venezuela has ever done.
Right.
I mean, they had some political capital there that this man has, within 2 years, just taken it to the ground. But more importantly, you have to know that there were 15 assassinations. 15 people that were killed, most of them shot in the head from snipers.
Mm-hmm.
That's the type of forces that we're dealing with in Venezuela. There were more cops and, you know, more military that are doing the bad deed of the government, you know, against the people than they had people voting.
Right. Now, this vote was actually being overseen by Cuba.
Overseen.
Yeah, overseen, as they say. It was being put on by Cuba, right? Because they wanted to be a communist nation.
Of course. Yeah, it's not being overseen. It's being very directed and manipulated by the Cuban government. Mm-hmm. So that's funny that they would want to be that open to say overseen, because I'm thinking that they want to, you know, be in the, they don't want to, they know. People know that they're the ones that Raul Castro is the one calling the shots in Venezuela.
Right. Congressman Jeff Duncan says that Venezuela is on the verge of a civil war. How accurate is that statement?
Well, it's pretty accurate. It's just worrisome because the people don't have any weapons. They have rocks and shields made out of cardboard. So I don't know how well that may go down to the poor people of Venezuela. But are they going to continue to be out on the street and not abide by whatever ridiculous vote they did yesterday? What you have to understand is they put the noose on their own neck, because by doing this, now the whole world knows that they don't have any political capital, that they are indeed the minority. 86% of registered voters did not vote yesterday.
Right.
And that's the fact.
What so, do you think, was that a protest or more out of fear?
No, that was a protest.
Mm-hmm.
That was a protest. If it was out of fear, they would have, meaning what, the votes that they got?
That they would, that there would be repercussions for voting against this Maduro government.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean. That even with those 2,400,000 votes, yes, the people that went there, they were bussed in there. They were made to vote.
Right.
And if they didn't, they were going to lose their jobs, or who knows else what they were going to lose. So this was a country that was threatened, and they had to do it. I had family members I spoke with all day long. And again, this was happening since a few days ago, that when they would go and receive, you know, whatever food that they're giving them, and they had to sign and put their, you know, fingerprint, that a little ticket was popping out saying voted.
Right. That's amazing. And remember, a government that can give you everything can take everything away from you.
That is correct.
And it's a pretty sad situation over there. Hector, we appreciate you calling in, buddy. We'll keep an eye on this closely. We appreciate it, pal.
Thank you so much. You have a good morning, and everybody have a wonderful week.
Thank you, Hector. Thank you very much. Hector Salazar, Venezuelan American here in Charleston.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
You know it. You love it. It's Sweet Night with the River Dogs. Tell you what, right now I'm going to take caller number 12 at 556-1250. That's 556-1250. Caller number 12 is going to win two tickets to join the entire WTMA crew at WTMA's Sweet Night with the River Dogs, coming to the Joe. That's going to be this Saturday. Can you believe it? This Saturday, as the River Dogs take on the Greenville Drive. Game time is 6:05. We'll take caller number 12 right now. So, G-Man, if you'll roll through there and grab us caller number 12, we'll get these fine folks headed out to Sweet Night with the River Dogs. It is always so much fun. Coming up at 9:10 this morning, we're going to be talking with Bob Constantini about General John Kelly's first day on the job. Steve Kastenbaum will be on with us around 9:40 this morning, talking about North Korea and the threat that they now face or pose to the United States. Of course, over the weekend, Kim Jong-un is sending up another ICBM, which has got a lot of people very concerned, because there is the possibility that the United States is now within range of some of these ICBMs that that he has that could be tipped with a nuclear weapon. So we did a low flyover near Seoul, and just as a show of strength, we'll have that story for you coming up in just a minute. Right now, let's go to caller number 12 and say, good morning. Who is this?
This is Debbie.
Debbie, how you doing on this Monday?
I am well for a Monday. And you?
I am doing fantastic. Congratulations, Debbie. You are caller number 12. You just picked yourself up two tickets to join the WTMA crew at WTMA's Sweet Night at the Joe coming up this Saturday. How about that?
What? That is wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, we can't wait to see you out there. I'm going to put you on hold. The G-Man is going to get some information from you so you can get on out there and enjoy that game of the Joe. Of course, we're going to have, you know, we're going to have food there and drinks, refreshments for you. It's going to be a fantastic time. It always is, and you never know who's going to show up out at the Joe when we do our Sweet Nights. All right, Lindsey Graham. There is Brian Hicks did a story in the Post and Courier this weekend about the possibility of Lindsey Graham running against President Trump in 2020. So he said, just this past week, which is 3 months in dog years or the Trump administration, Graham warned that if Jeff Sessions was fired, there would be holy hell to pay. He said any efforts to fire Robert Mueller, the special counsel investigating Russia, could be the beginning of the end of the Trump presidency. He called the Senate's latest health care proposal a fraud. He said, I'm not going to vote for a figment of hope. I'm not going to tell people back in South Carolina this replaces Obamacare. I'm not the bad guy here. So he is definitely, he kind of flip-flops. Over the weekend, Lindsey Graham also tweeted out that, hey, you know what? I'm with the president on this thing. We got to do something. So now President Trump is saying, okay, Congress. Okay, you want to play that game? Well, let's play a little hardball. I tell you what, you keep voting against the repeal and replacement of Obamacare, and I tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to sign an executive order that stops subsidies to insurance companies. How about that? I'll do that. And then let's see how you want to play this game. So, and immediately insurance companies were like, wait a minute, hold on here. That's not the we didn't expect that. That's not the way you do things in Washington, D.C. So Brian Hicks went on to say that Lindsey Graham has been in the Senate for 14 years, and some conservatives have been trying to get rid of him for just about that long. So I don't think Lindsey Graham ever has a chance of being president of the United States. In my opinion, if Lindsey Graham is the answer, it's a weird question. Okay. So, of course, he never polled over 2% during the 2016 campaign, never polled over 2%, was lucky to be on the stage when they were doing the debates. And I didn't think he looked all that strong in the debate. So I don't think Lindsey Graham has got a chance of being president, not in 2020 or 2024 or 2028. Certainly if he's running against President Trump. I don't think he's that popular. I really don't. I don't think people, you know, everybody hates the Senate except for their senator. Well, I don't think he's got a whole lot of support here in South Carolina, especially when you're looking at, you know, 2% in the polls. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Coming up in just a few minutes, Maxine Waters, yep, she's at it again. She was at a congressional hearing and apparently wanted her time back. She wanted her time back. We're going to play you this sound clip that is it's pretty interesting to hear. She is something. All right, what else is going on out there? Oh, North Charleston, another shooting. Three people were detained Sunday afternoon after a shooting in North Charleston, according to the police. Police in Dorchester and County EMS were called to Shady Tree Lane near Maple Grove Drive in the Orchards neighborhood about 2:50 in the afternoon yesterday. That's a neighborhood right there off Patriot Boulevard. One of the officers found a victim suffering from a gunshot wound to the arm. They were transported to Trident Medical Center. They believe a second victim ran into the woods, according to Spencer Pryor. Here's the thing, though. You're never going to stop this. You know, we have all these speeches and you know, the National Action Network. We get up there, Elder James Johnson, and they'll talk about, we got to get, you know, yada, 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 blah, blah, blah. Nothing is going to happen until the community comes together and decides they've had enough.
1250 WTMA.
Now, the TMA Morning Show continues with Charlie James.
Coming up at 9:10, we'll be talking with Bob Constantini about General John Kelly's first day as the Chief of Staff for President Donald Trump. Also, Steve Kastenbaum will be in around 9:40 this morning. We're going to talk to him about North Korea and the danger that they pose. So we got that coming up for you today. Today is National Cotton Candy Day. How about that? For all of you folks who just like pure sugar spun into candy. There you go. All right. It's also National Jump for Jelly Beans Day. National Shredded Wheat Day, National Raspberry Cake Day. I've never had a raspberry cake in my life. I don't even know how you do that. It's also Uncommon Instrument Awareness Day, whatever that might be. World Ranger Day, and it's Mutt Day. Mutt Day for all those dogs out there that some folks consider mutts. They're all special. And it's 8:39 at the Big Talker 1250 WTMA, WTMA.com. I don't know what Chris Christie is really thinking. The guy just, to me, can't keep from stepping on himself. He was apparently at a game, baseball game, this weekend when somebody was giving him grief, right? Somebody, of course, I mean, he's Chris Christie, right? Somebody's giving him grief. And Chris Christie kind of got in the guy's face. Here we go.
Appreciate that.
What did he say to you?
Huh?
There was a Secret Service right there.
What did he say?
I don't know. You want to act like a big shot?
So Chris Christie was confronting this heckler at a baseball game. He might not want to head out to baseball for a little while. This was actually a couple of weeks ago. He got booed at a Mets game after he caught a foul ball. Do you remember that? Chris Christie got caught the foul ball and was like, boo. And then yesterday he got into one of the fans that heckled him during a Brewers-Cubs game. So Christie was yelling at the guy, you're a big shot, you're a big shot. And there were pictures of this on the internet because all this time that Chris Christie is getting in this guy's face, what's he doing? He's holding a big old plate of nachos. He's balancing them quite well. I thought Chris Christie had gastric bypass. I thought he was trying to lose some weight, but apparently not. So he's doing it. And, of course, he filled in. He was a filled in on a WFAN, I think, up in New York. He was filling in as a talk show host, and people were giving him all kinds of grief for that. So Chris Christie, I don't know. If I was him, I would probably lay low for a little while, definitely, because he is not a fan favorite anywhere he goes. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. For you folks that work downtown, it is becoming increasingly difficult for you to park. It really is. I mean, I live downtown. And, you know, every now and then some places or it's just too hot to walk or anything like that. And we'll drive a little bit and park. But it's always a hard thing just to park. I mean, if you're just going in for an hour, maybe half hour or something like that, it's always difficult to find a parking place. But what about for the folks that live downtown? A recent survey that was conducted by the College of Charleston's Office of Tourism Analysis indicates that about 60% of downtown Charleston's restaurants and hotel workers live outside the peninsula. And regardless of where they live, 80% drive their cars to work by themselves. So they say with limited public transit options and strict street parking regulations downtown, those workers often have little choice but to pay to park in garages near their jobs, which can cost $16 to $20 for a shift. That's more than 2 hours worth of work for those earning minimum wage. Now, this one guy, Brian Getzinger, 27-year-old James Island resident, he's a full-time bartender at Ruth Chris over on Market Street. He says he spends about $60 a week to park nearby. He says, I do okay, but not enough to warrant paying $240 a month. That's absolutely too much. So about 70% of the 503 workers at the College of Charleston said they spend at least $25 a month in parking, with about a third of those paying $100 or more. And that includes the cost of citations they get for parking on a residential street or letting the hourly parking meters run out. So that is, and it is, it's an issue. It really is downtown. And of course, you know, they're talking about even, I know a lot of folks would go down and they would park on the Battery, and those parking places might be going away because they came up with this new plan to replenish or refurbish or rebuild the Battery down on the peninsula, and they may be doing away with those parking spaces there. So it's going to be even more and more difficult. Now, here's what I like. Now, during the campaign, and I don't know whatever happened with this when, you know, Tecklenburg and Stavronakis were running for mayor of Charleston. Of course, we had the live debate here on the show. One of the things was a trolley system for downtown. Now, I always thought this was a great idea. You have one kind of a central parking area, and then you jump on this trolley, and it's, you know, it's about, it does like a 15-minute loop. There are several of them running, and I think that could alleviate a lot of the problems. But still, you're going to have to pay to park in the central parking lot. So anyway, it's an issue that a lot of people are really dealing with and worried about because, I mean, my gosh, how many new hotels have we seen going up lately? Well, all those new hotels are going to have employees to staff it, and these folks aren't going to have any places to park. See, the peninsula, the thing about the peninsula is they're not making any more of it. What you have now is what you've pretty much always had and what you're always going to have. They're not going to expand the peninsula or anything like that. So I don't think they really, the folks there on the city council, really take into consideration where are these people going to park? How are they going to be able to get to work? And a lot's been made of, oh, you know, people just can't afford to live on the peninsula where they work. Well, that happens in a lot of communities. It really does. I mean, you think many of the people that work on Kiowa actually live on Kiowa? No, I don't think so. So I have no idea what they're going to do, but I don't understand what they say where there's limited public transportation. I see buses all the time. They're always empty, but I see them. WTMA.
It's Charlie James on 1250 WTMA.
Fake news. So over the weekend, the president was meeting with some kids in the White House, and there was this one kid there. It was in a wheelchair, and what the news reported was that the president snubbed this kid. This kid was reaching out trying to shake the president's hand, and he just kind of blew past the kid. Well, that actually turned out to be incorrect. That is not what happened. Had they started that video, I don't know, 2.5 seconds earlier, they would have seen that the president did indeed interact with this kid. Okay? And then he moves on to the other kids. That's the way you do it, right? So this woman, who, by the way, is having a birthday today, J.K. Rowling, she's a billionaire because she wrote the Harry Potter series, among other things. She tweets out something along the lines of how disrespectful it was that the president snubbed this kid and all of that. Well, guess what? That has been refuted. It did not happen. However, J.K. Rowling has not removed those tweets yet. She is still sticking to her story. And that's the thing about the folks on the left. They're just going to stick with their stories as far as President Trump is concerned. Now, here's another story that has come out. I got a little clip here of what President Trump said. You tell me if this is going across the line. You tell me what he's saying here.
When you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in, rough. I said, please don't be too nice. Like when you guys put somebody in the car and you're protecting their head, you know, the way you put their hand over. Like, don't hit their head and they've just killed somebody. Don't hit their head. I said, you can take the hand away, okay?
Huh. So now there were some people that said, it's kind of like Andy Griffin. Oh, Barney, look what he's done now. He's advocating police brutality. And a lot of people are taking this story and they're running with it. Do you think that was advocating police brutality? Or was he just talking to a bunch of folks there, members of law enforcement who he supports, and of course we support here on WTMA? Do you think he was advocating? No, not at all. The president was trying to be lighthearted. He was trying to make a little bit of a joke while making a point, because he was talking about the members of MS-13. You talk about gangs. These guys have taken the word gang and really ratcheted that thing up to a brand new level. They don't just intimidate you. They don't just shoot you. They are known for machete attacks on people, where they will literally hack people to death with a machete. Now, does this sound like a group of people that we really want to be nice to? No, not at all. So the president was just basically telling everybody what exactly what you're feeling. And you've thought about that before, haven't you? Of course you have. Why are they protecting that guy's head? So what? He hits his head. He'll be all right. He'll be okay. He's a big boy. So there, yeah, everybody's coming down on the president. It's amazing. Amazing to me. Amazing to me. 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. Maxine Waters, they had a hearing up in Washington. And Maxine Waters was questioning Steve Mnuchin. And apparently, Mr. Mnuchin was not answering her question quite as succinctly as she wanted. Listen to her exchange with Representative Mnuchin.
Well, I was going to tell you my response.
Just tell me.
Okay. So, first of all, okay, let me just say that the Department of Treasury has cooperated extensively with the Senate Intel Committee, with the House
Reclaiming
Intel
my time.
Committee,
Reclaiming
with the Senate
my time.
Judiciary
Reclaiming
Committee.
My time.
Okay.
Reclaiming
Matter of
my
fact,
time.
Mr. Secretary, the time belongs to the gentlelady from California.
Perhaps, Mr. Chairman, I don't understand the rules because
Reclaiming
I thought I was
time.
Allowed to answer questions.
Reclaiming my time. Would you please explain the rules and do not take that away from my time?
There you go. So Maxine Waters reclaiming her time as she is questioning Mnuchin. Apparently, he just wasn't answering quickly or succinctly enough for her. But we all know that when you're in these, you know, when you're in these hearings like that, every word you say is going to be under scrutiny. So you want to make sure that you are absolutely getting your point across whenever you're being, because I'll tell you what, you're being questioned by Congress. That is a very, very stressful situation. All right, 556-1250 is the number to be on the program this morning. That's 556-1250. Don't forget to download the WTMA Hurricane Preparedness Guide. It's absolutely free. It's full of a bunch of life-saving information. And, of course, we're hearing a new tropical storm is forming off of Tampa down in Florida. Again, this TMA guide, hurricane guide, is free. Got all kinds of life-saving information from you. It's brought to you in part by Property Casualties Insurers Association of America, Jeff Cook Real Estate, and East Bay Deli. So log on right now and get your hurricane preparedness guide at WTMA.com. All right, what else we got going on out there? Of course, 526. We've been talking about that forever. This is the zombie. We're going to call it the zombie highway because as many times as it's been dead, somebody has come back and tried to bring this thing back to life, right? Well, they're trying to bring it back to life right now, and it looks like Charleston County is going to be suing the State Infrastructure Bank and the Department of Transportation, alleging breach of contract. Now, it's a legal move, but the question seems as elusive as ever. When might we know whether this highway extension will ever be built? That's what we want to know. Just a simple thumbs up, yes or no. State and local officials have failed to agree on a plan that would put the $750 million project back on track. And if the project really is dead, discussions have not begun in earnest on what should happen with what's left of the $420 million that the state originally pledged to finish 526. Now, they took this up to the State Infrastructure Bank last week, and guess what they did? Yeah, they voted to wait. Yeah, well, we'll talk about this later. Yeah, we know it's important to you guys, but we'll talk about this later. Yeah, but here's my thought on this. Have we really laid out the plan to pay for the county's share of 526? I certainly hope they have done that satisfactorily. It currently, you know, it ends at Savannah Highway there in West Ashley. So the main reason the progress has halted on the project has been the price tag that has mushroomed to an estimated $750 million. This thing is going to be upwards to $1 billion before we get it built. It really is. It's going to be near $1 billion. The State Infrastructure Bank has pledged only $420 million towards that amount. Now, last year, the bank asked Charleston County to come up with a solid plan regarding where it would find the approximate $330 million. Huh. I don't think we've really laid out that plan yet. Well, we could put up a toll road. Please. That's not going to work. That's not going to work. Oh, and then we didn't even put it on the doggone referendum back in November. That wasn't even on the roads bill that we all voted for in November. So where is the money? That $330 million to finish 526. I just don't think we've done a good enough job at laying out a good, coherent plan on paying for 526. Now, I know we like to get mad at the CIB, but why would they want to give $420 million to a project when we really haven't even come up and said, hey, this is how we're going to pay for the rest of it? So I kind of hope our local representatives can come up with a better plan and something that is, I mean, written in stone. This is how we're going to do it and let the people vote on it. So I think it's going to be a long, long time before we see any movement whatsoever on 526. I really do. All right, coming up, what brings strangers together to help someone? What does it? I'm going to tell you a pretty heartwarming story coming up next hour about how strangers did come together to help somebody. It's very nice. But coming up at 10 minutes past 9 o'clock, we're going to be talking with Bob Constantini about General John Kelly's first day on the job as the chief of staff. Of course, we know Rince Priebus is no longer in that role. Steve Kastenbaum is going to be with us around 9:40 this morning, and we'll be talking about North Korea and the threat that it poses now to the United States with its ICBM program.